I mentioned a few things about meditation recently. It's going well. So I talked about these factors, jhana factors, and in the first interview, one of the people thought I was talking about jhanas. I just wanted to note that I wasn't talking about jhanas. I was talking about jhana factors. So you read about all that stuff, and one of the challenges that teaching the jhanas are various states of high meditation, which are described in very exalted terms, I suppose would be a way to put it. And then when that happens, a lot of people then try to get those exalted states of mind. But what I was talking about was just the factors and samasamati, which describe basically getting your mind focused and towards right concentration. And I wasn't talking about any attainment. And I did that deliberately because I know as soon as one mentions an attribute or a type of state of mind, it's so very easy for us then to try to get that. And then we get something or nothing. So if we get nothing, we feel like we're a failure. If we get something, then we think, is that it? And then maybe we go to a teacher, say, is that it? And then he might say, is that it? That's what Ajahn Chah would do, which I rather like. But the other is, I think, even more insidious, where the teacher becomes the expert, where you have to go to the teacher who then certifies you. Not insane, but rather you have this particular achievement. It gives a teacher a lot of power. And I've never felt comfortable with that. I guess because my teachers have always said, you figure it out. And I found that the most... I mean, they certainly encouraged me if there's something wholesome. They say, yeah, that sounds right. Keep on track. So that's my take on it. So these... What I talked about were the sort of basic things you read about in the text. And life isn't never that clinical. You know, you read all these nice little definitions, and then you got the garbage of your mind to deal with, right? And the confusion, and where does that fit in? Well, it's kind of general categories, just general categories. The attitude is one of faith. The attitude is one of heart. So lots of emphasis on compassion, on acceptance, on kindness. You know, so much of that. And then on energy, I said, dullness and restlessness. Somehow we have vitality, and that vitality can be vibrant or it can be depressed or not vibrant. What's the opposite of vibrant? Stagnant. There you go, finally. So it can be stagnant or vibrant. It's a kind of energy. And then just like the wanting and not wanting. And these are forms of attitudes and states of mind which keep us from calming the mind, keep us from being centered and still. And doubt... Doubt is the one where people who doubt try to figure out doubt by thinking. Sorry. It won't work. The hindrance of doubt, the way you figure that out is by stop thinking. So I suggested, like this last meditation, just don't think. Now that sounds almost brutal, I think, when you first come, just, I won't think. But that's not got all that preliminary work in it, the work of awakening, the work of listening, this is the way it is now, the work of non-becoming, non-resistance. You know, there's a lot of preliminary to that. And so now I'm just suggesting, if you understand those aspects, try to notice the impulse to think. Now that's an investigation rather than a castigation, or it's an investigation rather than a just trying to control yourself not to think. That won't work. And this is the hindrance of doubt. Doubt has two in the text. You have doubt as a hindrance, and then doubt as a fetter. So there's a deeper aspect to doubt, which is just not understanding the teachings, but in an intuitive or insightful way. But I think in this case, if one, you know, is an analytical person and uses thinking a lot, then that will be the fallback attitude which one will go to, and it doesn't work. In this case, you don't really need to think about the object of meditation, you just need to be with the object of meditation. It's not a matter of thinking about something, it's a matter of letting go of thought and being with the object of meditation. So then people, I've seen when I've tried to explain this to people, it doesn't work. Like 40 years of conclusion. If I try to explain doubt to doubters, they doubt more. You know, it's taken me a while to figure this out. So, I'm serious now. So now I say, don't think about it. I mean, I knew that a long time ago, but I'm not so much, you know, my hindrances aren't around doubt, around different things. No, it's just a suggestion that if you're meditating and you're always thinking about something, it might be the becoming bit. You know, it might be the bit about regretting something that you might have said or done or whatever. So that's that sense of self arises that way. So I think what really overcomes that is present moment awareness. Just like present moment awareness. And so in terms of these factors of concentration, vitaka, vijara, again to go over that, these are factors of jhana, they're not jhanas. So, and that's not so far away, is it? Initial and subsequent application, that's very ordinary. When we talk about these higher states of mind, they seem so extraordinary that either we think we can't do it, or people even get conceited. Oh yeah, third, yeah, piece of cake. Oh, you only got second. I've heard people speak like that. You've been meditating 2 weeks, you know. So there's all kinds of things happen with around funny stuff happen around that. So, I mean, if you're an adept, great. You know, hats off to you. But if you just look at it like more ordinarily, and if you look at those two factors, we talk of each other. It's around thought. But skillful thought. And how do you apply your mind? You think, well, this is what I will do now. And then you forget, no, this is what I'm going to do now. And no, this is what I'm going to do. And this is, and that's just right thinking. And, you know, it's like a child, no, back. And then after a while, if you do it with this sense of training rather than coercing, training rather than trying to become anything, you know, then it can work. So, and then the ekagata is the one-pointedness of mind, which is the that I think the suggestion there for me is this present moment awareness, one-pointed in time. And then you'll find, I think, quite naturally, you either like an object which is quite focused, like the breath here, or you just like to be listening, you find that really helpful. But I think that instruction to be present moment aware, I think it's quite doable. And what, if you contemplate that, you're not trying to get anything from the khandhas. It's not like you're looking for a certain kind of experience, you're just saying, this experience, this experience, this experience. So then within that, then the thinking mind thinks, well, was I doing vitaka or vijaka? So you're toast. You know, it's not going to get you there. So then you start to, okay, now just the impulse of thought. What, that impulse to think in the throat, it's like verbal, isn't it? Just to think and just that's what you're observing. And to observe that, you have to be very attentive. Very attentive, on the ball. So again, it can sound coercive, it can sound aggressive, it can sound all those things, but how do you, One of the things, if one's going to calm the mind, thinking is obviously one of the aspects of the movement and restlessness of the mind, which has to be addressed. Then, if I just put it quite simply, how do you address that? You know, what works for you? This doesn't work fine. That doesn't work fine. How might that work for you? It might just be, and I might just be able to bring up no thought and just abide like that. But to see the impulse, to watch the impulse. And then you'll see that your impulses towards obsessive thinking will be, quite often it's like just simple things like planning. You know, some people just have done planning for the last 40 years. And that's what they've been doing maybe as work, and organizing and planning. So the mind likes to do that. And of course all the plans you have are great. And so that impulse to, now I will plan, is pleasant. Mm-hmm. And it's clever, and you know, you're not stupid. You only do good plans. You know? And that's the hook. It's like, oh, this will be nice. Or if you're creative and you have a project you want to do, and you know, you get the idea for the creative project, oh yeah. And it's always a beautiful project. Or you want to, I don't know, buy something, right? A new outfit. So like, yeah, you see some ad in the paper or whatever, and then yeah, that'd be nice to have one of those. Boing, next meditation, you'll be shopping. You know, this is the way it works. Or some, you know, you say something to someone inadvertently, and you know, they feel offended, and then you realize, ooh. So regret comes up, and then you're sitting, and the regret comes up. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. Same thing, right? It's just triggered by a different event, and a different, I shouldn't have done that. It almost seems like you should flagellate yourself a little bit. You know, a little bit of self-hatred is only, it's my dues here. So you go through that pattern, and it's all, you know, it's all like this movement towards thought from the initial impulse in various ways. So it can be negative and positive. Now, you know, to plan is fine. You know, to shop is fine. To be creative is fine. To have sincere remorse and offer apologies, they're all very well and good. But the kind of compulsions towards those, so if one says, well, you know, now it's time to meditate, can I just see if I can see those impulses and compulsions and obsessions and see, all right, how do I not go to thought? What does it feel like before I go to thought? What does regret feel like before I go to thought? Or what does self-disparagement feel like before I go to thought? Or what does doubt feel like before I go to thought? And it's more interesting. And that takes like a real attentiveness on the moment. And that creates samadhi. That's what, so the mind now has to be very, very attentive. So then, you know, if you have a more object of meditation, the object of meditation acts as your anchor for that. So whether it's the breath in the moment, or the sound of silence, or whatever you like to do, it acts as an anchor. But I think beyond the anchor itself is the understanding of how to train the mind.